Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is the podcast of Invincible Champions.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
I have to excuse my voice today. It's not because I was doing the hurdle or any other such stuff for the youngins. No, I was there with the bucket collection from 9:30 this morning around Celtic Park for the Celtic FC Foundation Badge Day. And so, voice a bit hoarse. But how absolutely marvellous. The Celtic FC Foundation badges, my section ran out just as we needed to get in. Saw the TIFO at the start of the game, not a brilliant thing, and then on to the game itself, and the fact that Celtic have completed a season as invincible. So I decided to call up someone who's a million miles away, well, not a million miles away, but 10 to 30, well, how many thousands of miles away? No idea. Mark Cooper. And Mark and I just go on a general ramble fest. So I hope you enjoy that. There'll be more podcasts along soon, something for the Lisbon Lions, and then cup final, etc. There's also, on this podcast, we have Lee Griffiths and Brendan Rodgers interviews from today's post-match press conference. So that's also, I think, in particular, that Brendan is particularly interesting. Love getting any emails or Twitter feedback or anything like that on the podcast. You can rate us on iTunes. You can find us in loads and loads of places. You've obviously found us in one place. Let other people know about it. And you can email us in podcasts@celticunderground.net. That's podcasts@celticunderground.net. We'll be revamping the site over the summer to do some other things and bits and pieces. But anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper.
Any tears, let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
How it feels to go an entire season
without losing a game? I think you're going to need to look at the past, whatever, what is it, 100 years or so since it was done, or what, in the 1890s. I think it tells you the difficulty of achieving that. It's a monumental achievement by the players, and I think what gets lost in amongst, you know, all the records and everything that's set, there's a real dedication to excellence that they've shown since I've come in their life, how they've worked hard every day. They'll probably tell you themselves they get pushed really, really hard, but hopefully the benefits they see, and it's a remarkable achievement, you know, for the football club and for this group of players, and they'll scribe their name into the history of this incredible club now, and something for the kids and the grandkids to be proud of. So yeah, it's a special achievement. We had to come in and win the game and work well and to obviously beat the goals record and the wins record. It's truly a fantastic day.
It's a while since you actually clinched the title. Is it good to finally get your hands on the trophy today?
Yeah, it's quite heavy. It was it's a great feeling for everyone. I think it's brings an end to a league campaign that it's very tough, you know. Sometimes, you know, being down in England, you look up and you see teams playing 3, 4, 5, and 6 times we've played up here. But what that brings is it brings an opportunity to look at the game different tactically, and a game we played against a different system today, a different way of working, and we had to find a way to come through that. And the players did that, in particular second half, where I thought they were fantastic. So yeah, great feeling for everyone. I'm really pleased for the board and their choice when they asked me to come in. Delighted for the players and obviously clearly delighted for the supporters, because being a Celtic supporter is all about the feeling, and I think they should be having a nice feeling now.
One final game to go for that one last piece of the season, is it now? Do you think and talk about the treble?
Well, I think about the next game. I think that's been the key to our season this year. We've never got too carried away. We've never stumbled because we're trying to forecast what games we would have in 3-4 games' time. So we're getting now a good week to recover. We'll celebrate this success because this is important. And then we'll get ready for that and then look forward to that game, which will be a fantastic game at Hampden.
So, extra this week, this season of all seasons, given the kind of the 50th anniversary of Lisbon and that, the celebration around that kind of thing, but to make your own mark in history, is that extra sweet to put your own story across this season?
I think, firstly, it's very fitting that the team could honour the Lisbon Lions and the whole feel around the 50th anniversary. And playing in the type of way of which is synonymous with that great Celtic team of 67. So that's important. For me, my ambition is for the club. From a personal perspective, yeah, I'm proud that two of my last three seasons as a manager, my teams have scored over 100 goals. So I'm proud of that. I'm proud that, you know, my idea, philosophy in terms of attacking with aggression and entertaining supporters is followed through, and I wouldn't want to do that anywhere more special than here. But for me, it's an incredible club. There's a special feeling I have here, being a supporter, but it doesn't take away from the professional aspect of the job. I'm very much focused on our vision, which is to win titles and to play with a charisma and a quality that makes the supporters proud.
Brendan, how much did you use the unbeaten run as motivation? How often did you play that card with them over the last weeks, months?
Yeah, it hasn't really been a key feature, Tom, up until probably Thursday night. Because there's so many things, I've said it throughout the season, there's so many things that are out of our control in this type of situation. All we could prepare for what we could plan in the week and go into the games, but the players had arrived then with a couple of games to go, and then it's real. You can't hide from it. You know, you have a chance to go through the whole season and not be beaten. But it wasn't just about how we go through the season unbeaten. It's how we did it. I think the level of football, you know, the tactical discipline that the players have shown right the way through, and the excitement they've given the supporters has been incredible to watch, and like I say, they now stand alone in history, which is fantastic for them.
You said away back when you beat Motherwell 4-3 at that time that was the most pleasing performance. Is that still the most pleasing, or have there been others surpassed that now?
You know, I think I've looked over the course of the league campaign. I think that was a moment that was good for me to see with the team. The first real moment in that where we had an adverse situation. We'd come off the back of a League Cup win, a great victory against Aberdeen. We're now playing and we're now 2-0 down. And I then looked to see the response of the players, how they cope with the tactical changes, and then to then go and dominate that and keep the calmness, because that's important. You want to be a big team, how you play, you've got to play like a big team, stay controlled, stay calm. And then they went out in the second half, were absolutely brilliant. So that was a real defining moment after we'd won our first trophy together, to then show that, okay, when we're behind in games, if we stay calm, stick to our philosophy, our idea, we can still get there in the end. And so that was a real key factor in this league campaign.
Did the words unbeaten record feature in your team talk today or previous to today, or did it not feature at all?
Yeah, I the word I said to them was infrangible. That was the word I mentioned to them today. So you writers and academics will understand what that means. That's what I said. That was the word that I wrote up on the paper.
Did the players understand them?
Well, I gave the Stuart Armstrong did. But I did actually say, for those of you who don't understand, I actually wrote the meaning in below. So to be unbroken, to feel that, it's another word for their vocabulary. And but the definition and how we designed it was the purpose of today.
Brendan, you mentioned there about the players carving their name into the history and the fabric of the club, but you would have to appreciate that you've done that yourself this season too.
I think it's one. Listen, when I'm long gone from here, then I think that's when I'll probably look more at it. You know, the job is too big in here to allow too much self-praise or self-reflection. Now we still have to continue. I'm here to give as much to this club as I can, and then obviously when you're gone, then that's probably a real true feeling of what people think of you and a legacy that you can leave. But for now, I'm so proud of everyone at the as I said, the team, the staff, as I said, because it's a real special achievement to go through that. And we'll continue on that road.
Do you think, Brendan, will that happen again in the future?
I'm not so sure in my lifetime it will. And that's only because if you just need to look at how it was done before. The last team to do it was, what, in the 1890s? And it was, that was the 18 game? Yeah, this is a 38 game season. Because there's so many variables in football, that's what makes it such a brilliant achievement. You know, you go away to Barcelona and you lose 7-0, you come back, those types of next performance can, you know, you can lose games like that. You know, other games where you're behind, can you come back? You're going to some of your big rivals, you know, you're away in Aberdeen. These are all tough games. But how the players have coped with that and how they've dealt with the pressure of that and the intelligence and the qualities technically, it's such a hard, hard achievement. And to retain that focus, not just in the games, because it comes from your training. It's what you do on an early, you know, an everyday thing, education, training, to allow you to focus. So will it be done again? It's out there for everyone to have a go at. And we'll have a go at it next year again.
Because there's a BBC TV crew, but, you know, as they do, they'll say, well, is it down to the standard of the league? But, you know, now that you've done it, you know, is that a lot unfair?
I think it's very unfair. Because it's all relative. You know, it's all relative. You know, I was thinking back to games earlier on the season. You know, I was at Chelsea whenever Chelsea beat Wigan 8-0 in the last game of the season to pick up a title. Now, because it's a fantastic league, it's a brilliant league, but they won 8-0. So what does that make the Premier League? I think it's all relative. Whatever country you're in, the only thing that Celtic is missing is money. If you're talking about clubs, massive clubs, this is one of the great clubs of the world. But what it's not in a league where you have the finances to run with that. Celtic had the finances of another league, this thing would just explode, the sheer size of it. But also what the difference is, I remember something that Packy said to me when I was a very, very young coach down at Reading, and he was there with Tommy, looking at playing for Celtic. There's not a challenge, there's not too many challenges like it in Britain, where you have to win every week. You can go, I can go Liverpool, Manchester United and draw a game and it'd be a good result. You can't do that here. Every single game, there's a pressure and there's an expectancy. And like I always say, it's all relative. You know, and for us, yeah, okay, we're on a great winning cycle. But to continue with that and to continue and to try and qualify for the Champions League, that's tough. So I would say it's... Circling back in again, I would say it's a little unfair because it's all relative. Juventus have won their league, what, 6 times in a row. Bayern Munich, how many times have they won it? And again, so it's all relative. They have more money than others, but you still have to win it. But it doesn't take away from the achievement. It's a remarkable achievement.
What's the psychological pressure here compared to Liverpool, to win a league?
It's different. Like I say, you go into every single game here, whether it's at Ibrox or Pittodrie or any of the others, you go to Ross County, you go into an AstroTurf pitch, you're expected to win. And not just win, but win in a clear, defined, attacking way. And that's not easy. Any player, coach, manager will tell you. It's not an easy thing to do. Liverpool, it's different. you know, the challenge of going for the title for the first time in, trying to win it for, what, 25, 26 years. So that's a different pressure, but it's all pressure. It's all, but it's how you cope with it. If you want to be successful, whatever club you're at, you're going to have pressure. And when you work for the big institutions, the pressure increases. But you have to cope with it, and you have to be able to stabilise all the emotions for the players in order to perform and to create a vision that everyone wants to follow.
So I'm now joined by Mark Cooper. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm very good, thank you, Harry. Very good.
Paint the scene for us as summer turns to autumn down in... Or is it autumn turning to winter?
It feels... Well, it's quite funny because I was thinking... I always know that you're going to ask me this question. And it's been genuinely cold. And I looked at the app on the phone to see how cold it is. And 18 degrees came up.
Oh, but
I swear it must be about 11, 12, but it's never 18. But it's sunny today, but the last, say, 4 days has just been like rain.
Just to let you know, Mark.
It's terrible.
I know you and I can see each other, but nobody else listening to this just saw your panoramic shot out the window of the blue sky.
You'll have to improve your podcast, make it a podcast.
I think, do you know what I'll do? I'll FedEx or something, a green screen down to you.
Perfect.
And we can put the Celtic underground logo.
Nice.
And do you know the other thing, just as we're talking about the weather, I often think, we're recording this, it is currently 8:10 on Sunday night after the game. And I just suddenly realised, every time I text you and what, you know, we're talking about what time, I always put UK. I mean, as if I'm going to bother to find out.
First of all, you should be putting Scotland.
Yeah, I should do, but as if I'm going to bother to find out what the time.
Find out, right?
The time difference is in Argentina. And also, we're not going to be doing it at 8 o'clock at night, Argentinian time, are
we? That would be more convenient for me, to be honest, we could next time.
What time is it at the moment?
It's 4 hours difference.
4 hours. You see, it throws me because I just keep thinking you're very far away, you know, down the other end of the world,
and you're
across the way. So I just keep thinking that you should be further behind than you are.
Yeah, it probably should be. And in fact, for half of the year, it's only 3 hours difference. And weirdly, I think this is right, for a portion of the year, Brazil is only 2 hours difference from the UK.
Right.
Which is really bizarre. Anyway this is almost as interesting as the grass talk we did last time.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to tune into that Celtic Underground podcast. Time zone chats magic.
They just hear, here's Mark Cooper, and then they're like, I'll just skip 10 minutes until they stop talking about weather.
Right, so since the last podcast, there's two games to talk about. There's the Thistle game, the Thistle thumping, and the Hearts game. So we'll go into the Thistle thumping first of all. Did you get to see the game?
Yeah, I did watch it on Celtic TV. One of the cool things, even just aesthetically, one of the cool things about it was that the Celtic fans had a whole side stand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was obviously like jumping, like everyone was standing up, the flags going. So whenever it panned towards that section, just aesthetically for a viewer, it looks so much better than when it's a kind of, you know, we've got the one of the ends and their stand, you know, it's half Celtic, half them, and they don't fill it at all. And just if you're flicking through channels,
it looks
pretty good having like people stood up, flags going, and you know, just no seat to be seen. So that's the first thing, just kind of how vibrant it looked, and then the Celtic performance kind of seemed to generate from that, maybe.
That's one of the things when people are trying to denigrate Celtic's achievement that we'll get onto in a minute, and they say Scottish football's rubbish. But I think part of the reason why people turn around and say Scottish football's rubbish is I would question whether half of the people who say Scottish football's rubbish actually watch Scottish football, or do they flick on and see a Thistle game with a hill behind one of the goals, or a Hamilton game with a supermarket behind one of the goals, or an Inverness game in a shithole, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, it may sound petty, but actually the aesthetics of that, how many times do you tweet a picture or something or on Instagram from a South American game and the comments come back saying that looks magic?
Yeah. It's quite interesting. Every so often we'll talk about this, and it's quite interesting. I think there's a policy in La Liga for next season that they're going to financially induce clubs to film the sections that are shown on TV, like within the main camera span. And if, you know, there are empty seats or something, either they don't get that money or they get a very small fine or something to induce them to fill up those seats first. Presumably because that's probably the first thing foreigners say about the English league, is that it looks great on TV. Because the fans are there, it's, you know, they're close to the pitch, and all the seats are taken up. Then you click over to like Serie A or something, and it's half empty, and the quality is probably pretty similar, but it's half empty.
Yeah, and these things make a difference when you're trying to, you know, in the modern world where you're having to sell a product overseas to be able to get the revenue in that you need, because that's just the way the world is. These things matter.
Yeah. It's something that, like, the Dutch stadiums, they're maybe a little bit better than ours, generally. Like, if you're talking about the kind of provincial clubs. But one of the kind of most notable things about it is that, say, AZ or whoever we're talking about, Groningen or something, usually seem to have a full stadium. And even when Celtic or Rangers are going their way to St Johnstone, usually you're looking out into a half-empty stand.
Yep.
It's kind of no wonder that English people, you know, even if they are just, they want to watch a lively game and it's an hour before their game starts and they're flicking through and they probably think, well, if they can't be bothered to turn up for the match, well, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, that's one of the things, if you're selling Scottish football, is you show a full stadium, you show the fans going mental, you show the Simonovic tackle, and you say, this is, you know, that's how I would package it up. You show those types of things, you say, football the way we grew up with, or, you know, it's football the way what we always dream of, or, you know, something about getting back to basics.
Yeah.
But back on to the Thistle game, so what were your thoughts on that?
I thought Roberts was sensational. I think Roberts, the last, this isn't an original point, but the last, say, 6 weeks by Roberts, he's been exceptional. I think he's been our best player by a distance in this 6 weeks. It seems like he's beginning to really put it all together now. Because the last, say, 18 months or whatever since he's been here, he's looked good. And he's looked as though he's technically better than Forrest. But in a lot of that period, for, say, 7 months of the season, there could be an argument for saying that Forrest was a more effective player, that he tracks back more, closes down space when the opposition have the ball, and he's a pretty fast, direct outlet. Whereas now, I think you'd have a difficult argument to say that Forrest is a more effective player than Roberts just now. Roberts, he's passing at the right time, he's carrying the ball. You very rarely even see him lose the ball when he's carrying the ball. Like, he's going past like 2-3 players at once and then giving it. And then he gets it back in a tight situation and he doesn't lose it again. He's turning into a... Again, this isn't an original point, but he's turning into an exceptional player.
Do you know, the one thing I did wonder, when he first arrived last season, people were talking about how great he was, but principally my memory is it was the last seven or eight games that he played that he was really great, i.e. April, May time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what you've just said is in the last seven or eight games in particular, I mean, I do wonder whether it's maybe the pitches are perfect, you know, the pitches are starting to come back after the winter and the pitches are just right for him, the weather's just right for him, everything, the environment he's playing in,
yeah,
is maybe just perfect for him. What's your thoughts on, just before we get back onto the Thistle game, since we're talking about Patrick Roberts, our ability to retain him or get him to stay? And would you?
Up until about, say, 2 months ago, I'd have said no, I wouldn't have. And I was probably in the minority at that point. I'd say about 70% of people would have said yes, keep him. Mm-hmm. And I'd be thinking, okay, so if the fee's going to be about, say, 7-8 million or whatever to recoup what they've given to Fulham, and then his wages are going to be, you know, Man City wages, mm-hmm. whatever they gave him as the young player. And if he isn't a definite starter over Forrest, even then he was just like beginning to just get the nod over Forrest, maybe after the Rangers game, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, the Rangers game was about 3 weeks ago. Anyway, he was just beginning to get the nod over Forrest. But I was kind of thinking, well, if you're going to make that outlay and he isn't a complete definite starter, then wouldn't it be better to be making that outlay in an area that the manager sees as a, you know, complete necessity? Mm-hmm. But the last 2 months, he's been so good that thinking about his age as well and the ability to say he's successful in the Champions League with us for 2 years, mm-hmm. and then at that point he thinks, okay, I've been with Celtic 4 years now. Now's the time to go down to my own league and really excel in my own league as being a starter in my own league. Then you'd actually get a high fee from being an English player, being a pretty prominent English player, and presuming that he'd be successful in the Champions League. As to be fair, he was for the game he played against City away. So there would be a logic in that, and it isn't like
we're really digressing away from the Partick game now, but
there's another thing that I was thinking about, was that remember about 18 months ago when we were all kind of thinking, who's the next sale for Celtic,
yeah.
to sustain our model? We had Forrest, Wanyama, Van Dijk. And then we're kind of thinking, Johansson, mm-hmm. Beaton, are they really going to get like 8 million, 8 million plus? And now, say 18 months on, we have Dembele who can go, 25 plus?
Yeah.
There's Tierney who can go 15 plus. There's probably Armstrong, Simunovic who can go 8 million plus.
Yep.
Sell Dembele, not that we want to, but we do have that kind of in our locker to be able to do it. Sell Dembele, and that's as good for 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's another thing, just to finish the point, that's another thing, to invest that in Roberts, knowing that you're not really going to lose money in 2 years' time when we sell. With also, you know, the other four options I've just mentioned, if you ever needed to sell, that's an extra kind of thing to take into consideration when you are spending. And anyway,
no, I agree with you. I was very much in the same camp as you in that your point about the Rangers game. I mean, going into the Rangers Cup semi-final game, there was debate. You know, if you spoke to Celtic fans, they would rhyme off the what they thought was the optimum first 11. And there would be debate about whether it was Forrest or Roberts going into that game.
Yeah.
Whereas just a month later, and it would be Roberts. So your point about, I was the same as you, yes, it'd be nice to keep him, but the amount of money City would probably be looking for him, and he's not a first team starter every week, so do you, that's a bit of a waste of money on that. I was the same as you. Got, I suppose people would turn around and say, you've got to remember he's only 19. But the other thing that Soccernomics, the numbers game, and those types of books all make about your signing strategy is, it is better, because you know what you've got, it is better to invest money on in a player, in retaining a player, than letting a player go and then spending money and bringing a guy in, because the guy in's a risk. And particularly with Roberts, your point, I think, is well made. Either Roberts is the player we think he is, and he's worth buying from Man City. And if he is, as you say, he's 19, so 21, 22 years of age, two seasons of Champions League football under his belt. You know, English football actually don't have that many players playing Champions League football. And
yeah,
you would then recoup the money, because an English Premiership team would come in for an English player who's played Champions League football.
Yeah. There's another thing that I don't think has really been mentioned, is that, say Celtic say to City, say Roberts and Celtic say, okay, we know the player wants to stay at Celtic. We want to make you an offer, and they basically put in the fee to recoup that money they spent. There's going to be 14 English Premiership teams who then go, wait, Southampton immediately will go, what, 7 million? 8 million?
Yep.
No, we'll take him. So that's probably more than anything is the reason why I'm not completely sure that even if he wanted to come to us now, that at that point when almost everyone come in, like Tottenham also need an extra player to throw on a pitch, because they've got what they've got, Ali, Eriksen, Kane, and then Lamella and the Korean guy Song kind of aren't quite, you know, cementing their place, and they might be getting rid of Lamella or something like that. So that would be like a shot to nothing. Okay, we'll just bring him in, and he also, you know, fulfills a quota for the Champions League squad or whatever. And then like Southampton, blah blah blah, you know.
I suppose that the possibility of him retaining and taking into account what you just said would really be if he had, like Dembele sounds like he's got, a switched on agent who says, look, you go down to a top half of the English Premiership team, you're probably not going to be first team starting every week. You stay in, look how much you're idolised at Celtic, an intrinsic part of the core starting 14, 15 players. You stay at Celtic, getting back to the point we've just made, you stay at Celtic and play two seasons of Champions League football. You can still, you're only 19, you can still be going to one of these teams at 21, 22, but you're far more likely to go there and become a first team player.
Yeah.
But it's easy for us to say, because we're Celtic fans and we want that to be the outcome. So if we go back onto the Thistle game, I couldn't make my mind up whether we were fantastic because it was one of those game, you know, goals change games. So the minute we scored a goal relatively early, then that just puts us in the front foot. And not that I'm saying we wouldn't have played it well anyway, but the early goal from the penalty just kickstarts it, or whether we were just fantastic. What's your thoughts?
When I saw the lineup, I was pretty surprised that in the penultimate game of this unbeaten run, that he's going to start with the back four with only one kind of regular starter. That we have Izaguirre, who's barely played for months now.
Yeah.
Gamboa, who barely played all season, you know, coming in and out every so often. Sviatchenko, who's been out since basically the Hogmanay game. as a regular starter. Rogic in midfield. I was quite surprised. I was quite intrigued. And probably the most impressive thing I thought about the game was it was a complete credit to Emilio and Gamboa, how fit and sharp they were.
Mm-hmm.
They've barely played. They've barely played. They're not a foreign country, cold country. And they must, in training, they must be working, you know, they must be so professional, working like so well. Because Emilio just looked, you know, as though he'd been the regular left back for the whole season. And I find that real impressive. It was the same, I think, in November when, was it Kieran got an injury in October or November
End of October, I think it was.
Yeah. And to be fair, it's the same then as well. But, Celtic generally would play very well. But it is that kind of thing where you take the lead almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole kind of game change. I remember during the O'Neill seasons when I would get a train down from Stirling.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't drive, so I'd get a train down to Queen Street. I'd walk like an hour from Queen Street to a stadium, going to a stadium, and say we're playing Livingston at home or something. And I remember hoping that we weren't going to score our first one-on-one after, say, 45 seconds a minute. I wanted some sort of, you know, like, competitive game, some, like, back and forth, and then you actually have to work for the opening goal. Because you know it's going to come. Like, at that stage, like, the team was so strong with it. You knew it was going to come. And in that way, that wasn't the same last night because we're playing away from home and it's a fairly weak team. But it was that kind of thing that as soon as that first goal went and then, you know, you can see all the players are on it. We're 1-0 up. Partick are already thinking about the holidays. There's, 6,000 Celtic fans there chanting away, and you just know that we're going to put, 3, 4, 5 past them.
Do you know the other thing about that game was I was quite close to the, I was in the second row, so I was quite close to the front, right behind that banner that went straight along. So in the 67th minute when they put that on to sing In the Heat of Lisbon, that was magic because that was a whole minute that I couldn't get to watch the game. So I'm like leaning under it and anyway.
That's the only complaint I've heard about it.
Yeah, because you were watching it. I was behind.
Yeah.
But what at half time?
Sorry to interrupt you. I heard someone on Clyde moaning about it in the Heat of Lisbon flare thing today.
Did he?
Yeah, I heard a recording. Someone put a recording of it on Twitter. It's a Celtic fan, and he's just moaning, like, it's a disgrace. And I'm like, we've just won a league, come on. Anyway, sorry.
But at half-time, I'd texted someone and say, because Toure's not really played since Mönchengladbach or Motherwell.
Uh-huh.
And I'd texted someone saying, Toure's shorts are tight-fitting round his backside, right? Thinking, because He's been on the subs bench and it's not even looked like he's coming on. He's obviously, you know, and the players are warming up, and patently he's the guy who's keeping everybody, happy and upbeat. And then he came on. I couldn't believe it. But it was only with hindsight when I was thinking about it that there's a period not long after Toure came on for about 20 minutes, for maybe 15 minutes, where absolutely nothing happened in the game. We just passed the ball about.
Yeah.
Between Brown, Toure, did Toure come on for Boyata?
He did.
Yeah,
Boyata.
So basically, we just passed the ball about for, you know, it was almost as if, right, you need to get used to touching the ball now on the park, Toure. So, and that's all we did for 20 minutes. I mean, I can't think of anything happening. It was more just how fantastic it was, how professional it was. You know, Brendan talks about you know, if you're playing that high pressure game, you do need to try and get breaks within the game. You can't play that high pressure game all the time. And it was almost as if during the game, well, we've won the game now, we're going to give ourselves just that 20 minute break before we'll then go on and then score another couple of goals. And it was just excellent. And then the other aspect of that game, getting back to, I talked in the cup final about Roberts or Forrest. How now, if you speak to Celtic people and they're naming their strongest team, McGregor would be in it for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think McGregor would be in most people's starting 11.
And that's amazing. Can you imagine saying people this time last year?
Yeah.
You know, given the choice between Rogic and McGregor, it'd be 50-50 between the two. Maybe people put McGregor in because he's more dynamic. No one would believe you. It's an amazing transformation.
It really is, actually. He's developing into a genuinely good midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
his feet are very good, aren't they?
Yeah.
When he receives a ball in a limited space.
Is it fidgety?
You're right.
Twitchy
was the awful term, which I still can't think of. But no, that's meant to refer to something else. But anyway. I still can't think of a better term. But no, when he receives a ball, it just sticks, and he's so secure with the ball as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's a genuinely good midfielder. And what was the game the other week when, we had five youth players playing for a team. Mm-hmm. We had the two young kids, McGregor, Tierney, and someone I've now forgotten. And
Forrest.
And I think what Johnston, it may be the same for Ralston as well, but Johnston, Tierney, and McGregor have apparently been there since they're nine.
Right.
So they're completely, you know, it's completely as a consequence, their development has been like through Celtic. Not like when Arsenal bring over Fabregas and they claim they've developed him, and you know, he's
in the team like 2 weeks later or something.
So it really is a credit. And it's a whole like 10-year process. Like, they're in since they're nine, and it's a 10-year process. And you can have your ideas about how we should develop players, but you're only going to be proved right or wrong in a decade's time. It's like education.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive. And it's good. Then we have Johnston and Ralston coming through as well, which is good. It's just kind of carrying on, you know, about 3 years below, and it's carrying on. And then obviously you have, you know, the young boy Dembele, who's only about, 13 or 14.
Aye.
Who might be coming through in about, 3-4 years' time or something.
But it's really important if you want to attract young players, because if you're a parent of a really good young player and you've got a team where they continually parachute in players.
Yeah.
Now, I suppose the benefit of going to a club like Celtic in Scotland or Chelsea or Man City in England is you'll learn the good habits. You're learning at the best facilities in the country with the best coaches in the country. So that's the plus side of it. But the downside of it is you have zero chance of making it into that team's first team.
Yeah.
And, you look at Aberdeen and Dundee United in the 80s, who were attracting young players because they were able to say, you'll get to play in our first team. That's how they got it. So having examples of, and even if Roberts doesn't stay, so having examples of Forrest and Tierney and if Ralston and Aitchison and Johnston can make it, from what I'm told, they would be disappointed if Aitchison's not a first team squad player playing 10-12 games next season.
That's good.
That's how much they rate him. And also they really rate Ralston. I think part of the reason they really rate Ralston is because he's so physically developed. for a young person, which, you know, sometimes that's not completely within your control. But if you can then use those examples, and then you can even use the likes of Patrick Roberts, although he wasn't our player, we played a young player at 18, 19 years of age, and if he leaves us and does become a first team player with somebody else. And that's one of the things I was going to say about Roberts. I do keep thinking, just to get back on him, I do keep thinking about Fraser Foster, that we had him on loan for 2 years, and the end of the 2 years, or was it a year, whatever it was, he went back to Newcastle for the summer, because you remember we played a Champions League qualifier with Zaluska or something in goals.
Is that right? Can't remember.
We must have known we were going to get him back. That was at the time that, was Alan Pardew at Newcastle at the time? But anyway, we must have known we were getting him back, but you couldn't say for certain. And then he did come back and sign permanently. I suppose that's my only hope about Roberts. Although all this talk of going back, it's because we're still talking in the background, we managed to sign him. But in general, I thought Thistle game was just
fantastic. It was fantastic.
Yeah, so on to today.
Wait. There's just a very small thing about Alan Pardew and his judgment of a player. He was also the guy who had Mascherano on a bench for Hayden Mullins in the West Ham midfield. They bought over Mascherano and he barely got on the pitch. They had Hayden Mullins in. Anyway.
You see, can Mascherano do it in a cold Wednesday night in Stoke? All that garbage. So on to today. Do you know what? I don't think it will be for 15, 20 years that you'll really, really, really appreciate the enormity of going a whole season unbeaten. Because although we're living in the moment and it's fantastic, you're actually thinking, well, certainly I am, at the moment I'm thinking, this is fantastic. And I'm already looking forward because I think we'll be better next season.
Yeah.
So, it's just amazing. To have gone a whole season.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at Ross County away, where they get the worst penalty ever, these things happen in a season. All you need to have done is not scored. You know, ball cleared off the line, offside goal. Last minute, somebody goes up the park and scores.
Yeah. I remember Rodgers starting using the word relentless. Mm-hmm. Maybe in about November time or something like that. And then you notice it maybe about, he said it like two or three times, and then you start hearing one or two of the players in player interviews also using the same words, and then you start seeing it like written by fans on Twitter. You see this kind of osmosis from, you know, Rodgers' vocabulary down to, and it was the same with robust about 4 years ago. Robust finances that everyone was talking about. and I remember having a conversation like probably around Christmas time when I was back home with my dad, and it came up and we were saying that probably the only way that we won't go unbeaten is if a team scores in the last, say, 15 to 10 minutes of a game.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in that time period, even in a 15 minute time period, we're still going to create two or three chances.
Yep.
And so you could see it was kind of on. Like everyone could kind of see it was on because we were playing at such a much higher level.
Yeah.
And we had someone mentioned it on, I was listening, I think it was a Sports Sound podcast or something that has just come out just about an hour before we started speaking,
and I think someone was saying about the amount of different options
and the amount of different goal scorers that Celtic have in their team.
Yeah.
That Rodgers, I remember when Rodgers got injured, just before the Hugman A game, so probably around Christmas, by O'Day up at Dens Park. Mm-hmm.
And I think he was on something like 10 goals by then.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, there's a chance that Rodgers is going to get 20 goals. Sinclair's going to get 20 goal plus. Dembele's going to get 20 goal plus. then you know, Forsell will get like 12 or whatever, Armstrong will get 12, blah, blah, blah. And then you think, we have so many options. Then McGregor can come off the bench and also score.
Yep.
Roberts can score.
I mean, has Griffiths scored in every game since he came back into the team with Dembele out? I think he has. And has he not scored and done an assist in every game for Chile? Because he scored.
What goal did he score?
Because he scored today.
The penalty. Yeah.
Scored against Thistle, the penalty.
Yeah.
Scored against Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Did he score against St Johnson? Can't you mind?
I will find out.
Expert.
12 seconds. Partick, Aberdeen, no. Rangers, then Hamilton, then Dundee.
Anyway, the point stands, he scores.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. Who needs stats to back up our gut feel position? The very fact that you can take out a player that we're talking about being a 25 million goal a season striker, yeah, and bring in a guy who then scores every week, or more,
yeah,
is just a great, well, you drop a guy that you think's worth 25 plus million quid and bring in last season's 40 goal striker.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
That's another small thing about
what I was thinking when we're talking about whether or not we're going to sign Roberts, is that it's not one of those kind of like desperation things.
Mm-hmm.
And even losing one of the kind of five players that I mentioned who would go for money, a lot of money, it wouldn't be like a kind of tragic situation, like, you know, if we had sold Larson at some point or something, yeah, and everyone's pleading, no, don't go, don't go. If Dembele goes, good luck to him. And then we have, then our team will still be a strong team and we'll have 25 million to invest, maybe half of that or something.
I think that's the other thing that's certainly given me comfort of, you know, you can't, Stuart Armstrong, if somebody comes in with a 8-10 million pound bid from Stuart Armstrong and offers, he's whatever the age he is, 25, 26, and offers to pay him, well, McCarthy's on 70 grand a week at Everton, so offers to pay him 50, 60 grand a week. He's not a Celtic fan.
Yeah.
And somebody comes along and offers that money, he'd be crazy not to take it. But you do have the real comfort with the way the club is right now, with the authority that you think Brendan's got over things. You have the comfort that we've got the money in the bank, that Brendan's going to get money to spend this summer anyway after the Champions League. And you have the real comfort that if we sold somebody for that type of money, Brendan would get it to spend back.
Yeah, yeah. It's completely sustainable.
Yeah.
It's a great thing about it. Yeah, it's of complete confidence that this is going to carry on, and even more than that, that we're kind of going to grow and become, you know, stronger and stronger over the next two seasons.
So what were your thoughts before we get on to the future? What were your thoughts on today's game?
It was pretty drab, to be honest. Like, apart from the, if we're talking about the actual game,
yeah.
The first half was pretty drab, to be honest. I was watching Hearts thinking, how have they been, like, I think they had the worst form or the second worst form in the SPL over the past, you know, 3-4 months or something.
I think since Cathro's came in, if you started the league, you know, to do a Pedro Caixinha,
yeah,
if you started the league, yeah, when Cathro arrived, I think Hearts would be bomb.
Yeah. Well, and the players you saw, like, you're at the game, obviously. The players you saw, like, the Greek guy, Siolis, the tall boy, what is it, Bjorn Jonsson or something?
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
They are far superior than the, like, provincial club players.
Mm-hmm. So
they look fitter, they look stronger, and even today they look fairly well organised. Didn't you think, how are they getting hammered by like Dundee and stuff?
I know, because I mean, I suppose today they were fairly well organised in a fashion to a sort of, we're not going to get a doing from Celtic on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
So they weren't, I mean, they only threatened in the last 5 minutes, really. So I suppose there was an element of, there was nothing, they were keeping their shape very well, but they weren't, because they weren't really going to score any goals, they weren't breaking their shape. I got the impression, you know, they seemed to, in the first half, I felt they were just stopping us playing through the middle very well.
Uh-huh.
Until we then changed things, went to a back three in the second half and sort of overloaded the middle a bit from them and took a bit more control. And an example of how Hearts were not planning to go forward, we changed to a back three of Simonovic, because we took Gamboa off, and so, of Simonovic, Boyata and Tierney. And after about 5-10 minutes, Tierney was allowed to go back into his attacking wing back position. So we effectively played with two at the back.
Yeah.
It shows you how much they were just interested in just not getting a doing.
Yeah.
Touching on Hearts on the back of that, do you think there is any salvation for Hearts under Cathro, or do you think it's just a, you know, I used the other day with someone, I used Pedro Caixinha as an example, as a parable for Donald Trump. Everybody knows he's going to be out of a job sometime in the next 12, 18 months. It's just a case of when.
Yeah.
When's his St Mirren 4 Celtic 0 result that's going to get him quick? Is it going to be a long drawn out, John? Is it going to be a long drawn out process, or is it going to be 4-0 St Mirren, Inverness Cali for John Barnes? That, I was using that as an example. We all know Trump's not going to see out his 4 years, but is he going to drop dead of a heart attack with the stress, or is he going to be impeached or whatever? or all three? And so Cathro, are they going to keep Cathro, or do you think he'll be able to turn things around this summer?
Just watching the players today,
and thinking, as I said before, how aren't they doing better? Why are they getting beaten by, you know, the kind of mediocrity in the SPL or SPFL? And I was coming to a conclusion that they just can't be playing for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then it's not really going to improve.
Yeah. You know, because people are saying things, like, I've heard people on the radio, well, you know, he needs to get a summer transfer window to see what he does. Well, they got the January transfer window and they like 10 new players in or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, on to us. I thought Patrick Roberts
was... just to go back, I actually hope they do actually kind of grow as a club and improve. Like, I would love Aberdeen, Hibs, Dundee United and Hearts. Every so often we'll speak about this, but I really would love them to grow kind of as clubs. And I like that, you know, they're like building a new stand and because, to be honest with you, the SPFL, it is a poor league. The standard of Scottish football, it does need to be improved. And we do have these medium-sized clubs have the potential to be, you know, pretty competent European clubs, like equivalents in Switzerland, Belgium and, you know, Scandinavia. And they've been underperforming for years. I think Malmo's budget was a seventh of our budget.
Mm-hmm.
But I went into the accounts after we got knocked out by them.
Yeah.
And they were vague, they were pretty similar to some of our, you know, medium-sized clubs. And yet the level of player they had and the kind of, you know, just their general quality, and the like cute little stadium of about 20,000, yep, you know, packed full of people. And I think, and the same with Molde as well. Like Molde is about the size of Greenock.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my thing. I mean, Hearts getting to 22,000 capacity, whatever it's going to be next, yeah, season. If Hearts can get things in Aberdeen, you know, there's Hibs without, you know, without a Celtic or a Rangers or a Heart or their rivals Hearts coming to their stadium this season.
Yeah.
Average attendance, I think, is 14,500 this season. I think it's bigger, yeah, than Aberdeen's. I think average attendances in Scotland this season have been Celtic, Rangers, Hearts, Hibs, Aberdeen, right? And I'm the same as you. I look at it and I think across Europe, in places like Belgium and Switzerland and even the likes of Holland and in Scandinavia, you can get teams who are doing all right, holding their own, playing Europa League football on a semi-regular basis with that type of revenue and that type of crowd. And the other thing, when people are talking about whether Rangers can compete with Celtic, the big thing that they keep all missing is, I think I said before, Celtic did an analysis of whether Rangers, when the new Rangers arrived in the Premier League, whether they'd be able to compete with Celtic. And Celtic did an analysis that the cost of the infrastructure of having a stadium the size of Ibrox and a training ground the size they've got and just being a big club with all the personnel that you've got, if they have the same wage bill as Aberdeen, their break-even point is roughly £30 million.
Okay.
And that's 2 years ago now that I was told that, and since hearing that, that's what's given me the thoughts of, I mean, particularly next season, if Hibs can get things right on the park with a, whatever Hibs capacity is, 18,000 or 20,000,
yeah,
if Hearts can get things right on the park, I think it'll be a struggle for Rangers to finish in the top three next season, because they've not got a good manager. They're not going to be able to ship in players, and Hearts and Hibs can have roughly the same quality of squad with a fraction of the turnover of Rangers because they don't have the size of infrastructure the Rangers have got.
Yeah.
And everybody's, yeah, missing that when they're talking about what's going to happen next season.
Yeah.
But onto this season, onto, and so I'm the same as you. I actually wouldn't mind. I think it's partly because Rangers, I've loathed Rangers so much more than normal in the last few years, and at least Hearts got off their backside and saved their club. I don't quite despise, yeah, Hearts as much as I used to. But back on to today's game, I thought Padraig Roberts won man of the match in the stadium. I thought he was fantastic today.
Yeah. He was exceptional on, what was it, for the Griffiths goal, the opening goal.
Yeah.
He was very good.
But I thought for a good half an hour, at least the first half, it was, they just lacked that spark because they knew they were better than Hearts.
Yeah.
And it just lacked a wee bit. No, I'm not being critical, I'm just saying it just lacked the spark to be able to get the goals that they got, yeah, in the second half.
Yeah.
So were you watching it on Celtic TV?
Yeah, I was. The good thing about watching it on Celtic TV is that it didn't cut out after
2 minutes of the title celebrations.
Yeah, I mean,
I saw comments. I just saw, like, I was watching it on Celtic TV, and then on my phone, I was just kind of scrolling down, looking at any like Twitter comments or photos from people at a match, and I just saw kind of like about 9 tweets in a row, like about Sky Sports, and saying, "Why don't you get rid of, you know, Scottish football? Just ditch it." And I understand the point, but I was also thinking, why don't you ditch Sky Sports?
Mm-hmm.
Ditch it. Just, if you really want to watch, you can find streams all the time. Find streams Sky for Sports. Everything.
I've ditched it because...
Good.
Well, if you think about it, I get to see all the home Celtic games. So there's, yeah, only the away Celtic games. None of the European Celtic games are going to be on Sky, so that's those.
Yeah.
a third of Celtic's away games, somewhere just under a half, between a third and a half of Celtic's away games are on BT Sport, as are the European.
Yeah.
And I'm not that, I actually don't, you know, so ditch it, as you say. I do know if there's...
And tell them, I'm also telling them why you're ditching it.
Yeah, well, somebody within the media was telling me that there's been a reasonable number of sort of Twitter surveys and online fan surveys in the last few months about what's your thoughts on Sky Sports or BT Sports. Somebody was telling me that most of these are actually being created by Sky because they have had a disproportionate number of
cancellations
of sport in Scotland, and when they phone up, they're actually being told it's because what you're doing at Scottish football.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't think it's like tens of thousands, but it's sufficient to have them to look into what's the issue here. But
yeah,
they've got crap production. The production value's gone backwards. You know, today, dropping. I mean, it's the it's the atmosphere. It's not like, you know, occasionally, you know, sometimes you can win a trophy and it's a bit like getting a Christmas present that you've already found out what it is, or you don't like it and you're pretending you like it. You know, it's that type of atmosphere sometimes in a match when we've been champions for so long. But today wasn't like that. You've got this eighth biggest average crowd in Europe. There's not a single Serie A or Italian League team who's got a bigger average attendance than Celtic. Total attendance of Celtic in the league this season. Even Barca, I think because they play fewer games, but anyway, that's bye-bye. You've got the eighth biggest supported team in Europe in a fantastic stadium that everybody revels about the atmosphere. People talk about if you ever have got to attend a Champions League game anywhere in the world, you've got to be at Celtic. And they've got that. And they say, bugger that, we're off. We'd rather watch Sunderland kick the ball out in the 26th minute so that John Terry can get a standard ovation for a substitution.
I've heard about that. I still haven't seen it.
Well, I'd only heard about it, and then just before we started this on Twitter, somebody posted it up. And apparently Davy Moyes had agreed before the game that Sunderland would kick the ball out in the 26th minute just so that John Terry could get substituted. It's awful. Yeah. It's cringe. And then he gets a guard of honour going off. It's not a testimonial. Yeah.
And the 26th minute as well.
That's because he's...
I know it's his number, but
I know.
It's like, even that's cringe. Like, all of these, like, you have to applaud in the 26th minute because in, you know, 1926, blah, blah. Give it a break.
It's like, I know this is, if you're listening to this and this has happened, I apologise if I offended you, but it's like when somebody's died and you see the half and half Celtic Rangers shirt pinned to the railings at the side of the road. Don't do that for me, please. Any Rangers fans I know, if I get run over by a bus tomorrow, don't go and do a half and half Celtic Rangers strip.
I'll put one up just for me.
No. It's just awful. But yeah, Sky, go and ditch it and don't bother with it. And the thing about it is, to try and add value to their atmosphere of the game, they did something they never do, which is Tanner McCann and John Collins came onto the park and presented. I mean, I only know this because I was at the game and all of a sudden I heard people booing and looked down and I heard them all chanting at Neil McCann. But that's obviously to try and encapsulate some of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But then ditch it to go to a meaningless game. Anyway, that's just a disregard. So today it was, I think the performance today, and I'm not decrying it, I thought it was functional for large parts of the game. They did what they need to do to win it. So on to the cup final.
something I quite liked about the cup final was, or that's coming up for a cup final, is that Aberdeen have gone down to Rangers, beaten Rangers in Glasgow. Today they've gone to Partick, hammered Partick 6-0.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives an extra kind of like their own fans, they feel a kind of momentum. They've already won in Glasgow twice in the last week.
Yeah, particularly in the last two seasons. Part of the reason, you know, they've been awful post-split.
Yeah.
So it's been good post-split, coming down to Glasgow and winning, as you say, to give them the confidence. So, do you think they've got a chance then?
Not a proper, almost like how I said to you before, that they would need to score in the last 15 minutes. They would need to take the lead, sorry, in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah. Like when we played in Inverness and we hit the post and we hit the bar and the keeper's having a great game.
Yeah, exactly. But I assume we'll play very well and we'll turn up.
Well, the mentality of the players is such that you got to think they've just got a superiority attitude when we walk on the park.
Yeah.
And then
we have too many good players on the ball as well. Like sometimes say if Nakamura didn't turn up or something, a player like that. And then you're kind of looking for other players who can unlock the defence, who can like receive the ball, you know, in tight situation, go past a player, put in a through ball or whatever. And if he has an off game and he's not really getting into a game, then the rest of our team at that point was quite a functional team.
Yeah.
Quite a closed down space when we don't have a ball, you know, put crosses in for Vinegar. Now, if Roberts doesn't have a good game, if McGregor doesn't have a good game, if Armstrong doesn't have a good, Sinclair will turn up.
Yep.
Brown will be the. Well, we have about seven very good footballers in the team, who are all very happy to receive the ball in like small spaces, pass the ball in small spaces. A few who can go past a player. So. I'm assuming that, you know, not everyone's going to have a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, you know, I hope Aberdeen turn up as well in a way. I would love this to be a really competitive game where we, you know, beat them like 4-2 or something, but it's, you know, a great final.
There are two goals coming injury time, so you're not shitting your pants anyway.
Yeah, whatever. I don't really care. 5-6-0. I'm trying to be gracious here, but I'm really looking forward to it.
But you
because they are a half decent team as well. It isn't like we're playing, you know, like I remember a couple of times when we play, say, Dunfermline in a cup final, and you just know, you know, at some point we're going to score our first goal.
Yeah,
it's
a bit drab because you know that it's something that we're going to do enough to win. You know they know we're going to do enough to win.
Sounds like Donald Rumsfeld here.
But you know, it's a bit of a.
That's true.
Let's just play this game until the outcome that we're expecting happens. Whereas, you know, they, as you say, they've if they come on with belief, the good thing for me is I would be surprised if we don't perform in the day. Because of the enormity of winning the treble, because it actually looks like we've got players who can cope with that mentality. You know, you can imagine Patrick Roberts just thriving on the big park of Hampden. And then it's the thing you say of the big difference that we've got over them is Patrick Roberts starts, you can bring on Forrest. McGregor starts, you bring on Rogic. Griffith starts, you bring on Dembele, because Dembele's going to be training this week. To have those options to come on the park.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what's your prediction for the score? And the team. Tell me your team first of all.
Well, Mikey Johnson starts
with his twitching.
It's going to be a standard team, isn't it?
I've not spoken to you since Mikey Johnson played. I thought he was very good at just drifting off a player at the last second and getting space to receive the ball in.
Yeah. Anyway, absolutely.
I'm talking to you like you're his dad.
I'll pass it on now. I'll pass it on.
Back on the team. So box out the team. So run us through your team.
I remember, this is quite funny actually, I remember about 4 or 5 years ago when I first came on the podcast, and I think it was Eddie doing it then, and I'd then ask him, do you want the team I think it's going to be, or do you want my team? And my team had about 9 changes to it. It's like, okay, well, Hoovens is out. And O'Day at 19 is already better than Lubens is at 24, so get rid of Lubens. And I kind of go through a team and it would, you know,
be completely different. Now it's basically the team that everyone would agree with.
Yeah.
It would be different, I think, had Rogic, if he was completely 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems like a player who actually needs, like, to start 5 games in a row or something.
Yeah.
To really work up his fitness and to get sharp. So hopefully he can kind of be at the same level as everyone for the start of a new season. So the team for Saturday, I'd have Gordon, Lustig, Simunovic, Boyata, Kieran, Brown, Armstrong, McGregor, Roberts, Sinclair, Dembele.
Dembele, you drop Griffiths and just put...
Oh, sorry. You're right. He's not fit enough yet.
Okay, Griffiths.
Okay, yeah. And what's the score going to be?
3-0.
After you want a 4-2.
I know. I was going to say a 4-3, but then... I was going to say a 4-3 before, but I thought, no, I actually want a little bit of a gap here, man. I don't think... I would like it to be, like, a great game.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, with them almost matching us, but not quite.
But
they're not close to us. If we were in the same, if we went in the Scottish League, if we were, say, in, you know, a good league, like the French League or the German League or whatever, we would be near the top and they would be getting relegated from the French League.
Yeah.
They're an okay championship team, probably, if you put it into English terms.
Yep. And I get your point about it'd be good to have a good game. It's a showpiece for Scottish football. The other part of me says, I'd love to be able to celebrate the last half hour knowing we've won the treble.
Yeah.
Just spending the whole of the last half an hour of the game just celebrating the fact that we've won a treble. That, you know, 3-0 up at half time, score a fourth goal 2 minutes into the second half, and then just the exhibition. You know, there's another part of me just would love that.
Yeah.
But don't forget, winning games is boring.
Absolutely. And this lump is carried on and on and on. I can't wait until the season's over.
Anyway, with that prediction of the 3-0, I will say, Mark Cooper, thanks very much.
Cheers. Stay well.
Delighted to get that party started today with that goal.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's frustrating in the first half. Hearts sat in on a really low block and tried to make it difficult for us, but we knew it was coming. We just had to break them, be patient, break them down easily, and, you know, in the end it was a good 2-0 victory for us.
How did those title celebrations compare to previous seasons?
I think this one is a bit more special than other ones. You know, every title wins is great, but, you know, as long as we didn't get beat, we knew we were going to be invincible, and, you know, I think that was the message going out at the start of the game. It's a great achievement from everybody at the club, and you know, we've got one big push to go next week.
What does it mean to all the players? I mean, it's unbeaten for the entire season.
Yeah, I think, you know, after the first game against Lincoln Redemps in the Champions League qualifier, I think there were a few fans after the game that were we were nice to the boys, but the gaffer told us to be calm. You know, it's the first game us as players, you know, we knew we were going to be up against it at times. But, you know, credit to the players, and it just shows what kind of mentality and character we've got in that dressing room downstairs.
There's just that one piece missing from the season, the treble. Is this the point now you start talking about it?
No. It's that old cliche, obviously. It is the cup final, and we need to take it as it comes. As long as we play the game, you know, we'll have a great chance of winning it.
I take it after the game in Gibraltar, you just could not have imagined an unbeaten league season. I know it was a different competition, but, you know, just...
I think, you know, after that one, there was a few fans moaning, and rightly so. I think Bruno touched on it in the match programme that I think it was like 36 degrees. It was one of the worst Arsenal tests that we've ever played on, but, you know, that's no excuse. Us as players, we've got to, you know, take the conditions whatever way they come in and put on a performance. And, you know, the start of the league campaign, you know, we just kept getting stronger and stronger towards the end of the season, and, you know, there was a lot of talk with a couple of months to go that could we do it, the pressure's all on us, but we've showed that we had the bottle and mentality go right the way through.
Did you think it was possible?
I think after the split was made, you know, I had two really tough trips, Ibrox and Pittodrie, and I thought that if we could get through them, we had a really good chance. And, you know, we started really well against Aberdeen, got 3 goals, and that was comfortable enough for us. And I think after that game, you know, us in the changing room, we really thought we could do it.
There's going to be folk that will look at your achievement and inevitably question the standard of the game, the top flight, but how good an achievement do you think it?
Yeah, I seen that for Chris Boyd this morning in his column, that he said it's the worst standard the Scottish football that there's ever been. I think if you look at it as a whole, you know, Aberdeen, I think they've got a really good points tally. St Johnstone playing really well, Partick Thistle playing really well, and, you know, Rangers have had their ups and downs. But I think, you know, it's all about us and what we do. I think, you know, going through the whole season unbeaten is quite an achievement, regardless of what league you're in.
Because you were in the Champions League getting points as well, it's almost a bit disrespectful, isn't it, to speak like that?
I mean, everybody's allowed their opinion. You know, he played in a good Rangers team back in the day. But, you know, we can only play what's put in front of us. And it's testament to the boys downstairs. We've faced different challenges throughout the season, and, you know, have come through to the end of the sun shining.
Was there a point on Thursday night that you thought you might not be playing today?
Aye, kind of. But, listen, I spoke to Gaffer after the game, and it was one of the ones that I didn't know what he'd be bringing off, but he explained to me why he did bring me off, and, you know, it's just one of the things. And back in training, you know, the gaffer said it in the press after the game that the line was drawn under it, and, you know, the boys were giving me a bit of stick after it, and, you know, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter giving me abuse, but, you know, I knew after the game that, you know, the gaffer had drawn a line under it, and, you know, we look forward to Sunday, and, you know, I'm delighted to be back playing in the pitch, scoring goals.
He told us that you sent a 7-8 text to him on Friday morning. Does that mean you had a sleepless night on Thursday?
I'm going to say 7 o'clock. Nah, I think he needs to check his clock. it was kind of early, I must admit. But I just wanted to put my message across that, you know, what I did, I shouldn't have obviously acted the way I did. It was disrespectful towards him, towards the teammates, and towards my fans. It was no disrespect to Scotty coming on. I think, you know, the gaffer was trying to get him, you know, his goal tally up and try and see the game out. But, you know, in no way, shape or form did I mean any disrespect to the management staff, the players or the fans. It was just a moment of madness from myself, and, you know, I apologise for it.
You literally did kiss and make up with the manager after the game, didn't you?
To be fair, I didn't expect that. You know, I got the stare of death on the bench when I turned around, and that was enough to tell me that, you know, enough's enough. But, you know, after the game, like I say, the gaffer drew a line under it and we moved on, and, you know, thankfully we've got the win today and we're going to celebrate now.
Is he a good kisser?
Not bad, eh?
Have you got a cup final next weekend? They've won 6-0 today, Aberdeen. I mean, it should be a bit of a classic game,
right? Yeah, listen, we're under no illusions that Aberdeen will bring the A game. They're a really good side, and on a day they can beat anybody. But, you know, if we ever slip up, then we'll have a really difficult afternoon. If we bring an A game, you know, we'll have a really good chance of winning that cup. But, you know, we've got the week to prepare now. You know, we'll do everything we can to be prepared, and come Saturday at 3 o'clock, you know, we're ready to go.
What would it mean to you to be part of a Scottish Cup winning team?
After the game, if they do win, I'll be thinking, thank God. You know, I've been to 2 finals already, and I've been beat twice, so hopefully it's the start time lucky for me. I'm looking at my chickens. Like I say, if you do bring it again, you know, I'll have a really good chance. Oh, it hurts to go away.
It's impossible to stay, but there's one thing I must say before I go. I love you.
I love you.
You know. I'll be thinking of you.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast. We'll be more along soon. Plenty of Celtic SC Foundation stuff. If you went along, put your money in the bucket today. That was excellent. Well done. Got your badge. I think that's now six back title badges in a row that we will have. I'm sure you're not wanting to be missing out on having your collection of 10. So if you had a challenge getting them pre-match today, because the bucket collectors finished around 10 past 12 so they could get into the ground for this and not miss. Normally I would miss 20 minutes, half an hour at the start of a game, sorting things out. So we didn't do that today. So if you missed it, I'm sure the badges are going to be on sale at the Celtic shop, and you can get them there. They're £2. The bulk of the money, or all the money, going to the Celtic FC Foundation. And there's various other foundation events coming up. There's obviously the Hydro, which is a foundation event, and I think there are a handful of tickets left for that. And then there's a foundation event in London, and then it's the Celtic FC Foundation Golf Day. Anyway, enough of me. I'll just say good night and God bless, and these are incredible times to be alive, so please savour every second of it. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper. Good night.
I love you.
I love you.
It's true. You're so cute, honey G. Won't you save them up for me? Your kisses for me. Save all your kisses for me. Bye-bye, baby, bye-bye. Don't cry, honey, don't cry. Gonna walk out the door, but I'll soon be back for more. Kisses for me. As you know, you've got to save your kisses for me. Save all your kisses for me. Bye-bye, baby, bye-bye. Don't cry, honey, don't cry. Won't you save them for me, even though you're only three?